First, I'm grateful to the Web Society Board for daring to have invited me today, in spite of the Brexit. As I will give this talk in a non-native language, excuse me in advance for my mistakes and my pronunciation. I have chosen to read a text rather than improvising. I usually do so. Otherwise, searching for words would be time-consuming and error-provoking. So let us define esoteric. First, with the official dictionary definition. But in this talk, it will rather mean private, secret, confidential, with some kind of magical and wizardry, but without excluding anybody. Concerning deep sky objects, I've selected those criteria, but one couldn't find other esoteric aspects. Be careful that esoteric is a subjective notion. What is esoteric for me could be classical for you, and vice versa. First variable, a suburban site versus a preserved site. So this is to illustrate the dramatic difference between different sites on our planet. So for example, the Crab Nebula can be considered esoteric for urban astronomers, but quite casual under pristine skies, where you can see fainter objects. Second variable, instrumental power. Every size of telescope allows a different esoteric range. Of course, there is less choice with small aperture. Yet, there are some. So, why going esoteric? It's the third variable. It's a personal commitment for me, and I chose a long time ago the dark side of the hobby, leaving mainstream observing. Getting off the beaten track gives one the thrill of discovery and a wider range of interests. First visual sightings are also appealing, such as observations of planetary nebulae by Jack Marling and Steve Gottlieb in the 80s, for example. It's even more so when you can claim to belong to the handful of human beings having observed visually an obscure deep sky object. Ultimately, the fate of an esoteric object is to become classical one day. I remember a time, a long time ago, when Orsed or Vain Nebula were considered esoteric, but are they still so in 2018? So now to my personal esoteric factors. Esoteric Web Society, you're part of it. So my personal esoteric factors as an observer. This is a location I observed from in the Alps, southern France, as you now know, because I usually live near Paris. So elevation and remoteness from big cities are the key for a transparent sky. I own an old American Dobsonian of a reasonably good size, although of low optical quality. This preserved site offers very good transparency, naked eye limiting magnitude, as you can see, of 6.8, but still shows some light pollution from near village. I usually have to contend with poor to medium atmospherical seeing because located at the bottom of valley with non-liminar airflows. After 30 years of deep sky observing this year, I can quite confidently consider myself as an experienced observer. Otherwise, I would not give such a talk. I wish I could add another 30 years to my experience, so far as my retina will allow it. The exact word of André Braik concerning scientific research was used understand instead of see. So here I paraphrase him in a deep sky way that perfectly fits what we do at night with our telescope. So here is my evolution as a deep sky sketcher from the 90s. And to up to now. So what will come next are computer-assisted sketches, in my opinion, more realistic. You may even have to use averted vision during the talk. I'll try to baffle more the telescope there. If you do so, you are as close as possible to the observing conditions I experienced, and my purpose will be reached. It is not a transformation of the hand sketch drawing, rather an improvement. So be assured that all the digital images I produce are always based on hand sketches obtained in the field. Some science fiction. In say 10 years, maybe Apple or Samsung devices will do all the hands work. Now we shall ramble through different esoterical themes that are illustrated mainly by my own observations. Otherwise, credit is given to the author. I consider these esoteric ways as valuable for now, but maybe I may find new concerns more interesting in the future. So on the following slides, reference and constellation are given at the top right, and aperture and power used at the bottom right. North is at the top, east at the left. So we have now a long list to peruse, and the purpose is to show you the results of observing with esoteric in mind. So the first theme is about random star groupings found while searching over real deep sky objects. I do not systematically chase after that, but I used to find some. So this one was found while observing nearby NGC and King clusters. So there are the clusters in question. There are three of them. And at last, my own star grouping. ANR stands for AMA non répertorié, non-registered cluster. That's my personal calling. So searching a comet with binoculars at the wrong place brought me to this nebula-looking object. So with the telescope, it was completely resolved. Another group was noticed while searching for a faint possible planetary nebula. This is the group and the position of the search nebula, but it was not to be seen. The nebula was not to be seen. So here, the annular gathering of stars in the southwest quadrant was found while searching for the planetary nebula Abel 15. This geometric arrangement of stars was found while searching for the planetary nebula Minkowski 1-7. The medium-sized central group was found while searching for the NGC planetary nebula, which is to be seen with averted vision just above and can be mistaken for it at low power. Hope you see it. If not,
I baffle this look. And don't look at the light of the exit.
Another gathering of stars was found while searching for dark cloud Barna 164. And it was not appearing in Uranometria. I had no charting software at the time. And I found it afterwards to be an official cluster with approximate coordinates. The whole story was published in an old Deep Sky Observer. So my next esoteric theme is edge-on galaxies. They are quite aesthetic, and collecting them leads one to esoteric. So here another spindle, and of course, for hadron galaxy selection, you can refer to the flat galaxy catalog. Galaxies tend to aggregate, and this galaxy, among its neighbors, lies near the famous double quasar, which we'll see later. A glorious sample of its kind, NGC 4244, shows two quasi-stellar blobs at the northeast and southwest ends. They are independent galaxies rather than embedded H2 regions. Very faint. In the splinter galaxy, a nebulous knot in the southern extension is marginally responding to UHC filter. As is the case here, I have come to think that the farther hadron galaxies are situated, the harder it gets to see the extensions, unfortunately. There is the famous integral sign galaxy with a physically bound companion to the southeast. Another faint sample. This one and the near galaxies belong to the same real gravitational group. You can sometimes have two hadron galaxies in the same field. It's an apparent pair, not a real one. And even three. And it's also a real gravitational group. So now you can find some esoteric in faint globular clusters, especially if not referenced in the NGC. So beyond the globulars in the NGC, there are the Palomar clusters, first logical choice, not another Palomar. And if you have exhausted Palomars and Tertian, you can start to chase globulars outside the Milky Way. So this one is in Andromeda Galaxy. And there are a bunch of them. But I will not show them here. So one of the 15th magnitude stellar objects near the center of this drawing is a globular cluster of this galaxy. There. Use averted vision. Far averted vision. NGC 1569 shows a double nucleus composed of two superstar clusters, not globular clusters, but superstar clusters. And by the way, on this subject, the whole central area of the galaxy does resist to nebular filters. So there must be starburst regions and so on. Let us now explore some extragalactic H2 regions. Esoteric indeed. This is the Sagittarius dwarf located in the local group, comprising numerous OB associations and H2 regions. So can you locate the six I observed? This is one. This is two. Three. Four. Yes, there is one. Five, six. So, obvious spiral arm and notorious H2 regions on that remarkable object are spread all over the galaxy. Another sample where H2 region identifications are very simple, but that's not always the case. In the following target, you can see that the H2 regions have reference, esoteric reference. So they are at the beginning of both spiral arms, and one is diffuse and the other nearly stellar, and both keep up somewhat with the UHC filter. There, you may perceive three H2 regions on the southern side. So they are just under the galaxy. So they give a little flash. It's flashes. There are tiny blobs on the south side. Only real observers can do this. Can see this. Sorry. it's more obvious in this one. The Splendid Fireworks galaxy, which shows numerous spiral arms and H2 regions to the scrupulous observer. You take some time to perceive. Oh. Here, a major starburst H2 region called the Markarian 59. It outshines the southern end of the galaxy. So there is the view with the O3 filter. So you can see that the H2 region stays the same brightness, but the whole galaxy goes fainter. Here, a faint H2 knot appears faintly beyond the end of the eastern arm. There. Don't know if it shows on the screen, but I see it well there. interaction with its companion provides numerous H2 patches to the Wake Galaxy, as you can see. The Little Pinwheel Galaxy gives shelter to three apparent H2 regions on the right of the galaxy. This one is called Eye of God. I don't know why, but it's called this. And it has three H2 regions throughout the disk. The companion galaxy to the east is a chance alignment. This interactive couple gave birth to a giant external H2 region to the west. There you can see a small part of it. So here, one low-profile H2 region is glimpsed on the north side. There. Glimpse again. And here, now we move. We move on to nearer objects, the faint planetary nebulae. An esoteric way of chasing them is with a spectroscope of prism device, as is the case here. So the planetary nebula's monochromatic spectrum keeps stellar, but the continuum of stars is spread. So the nebula. Well. You see, it's in there. So let's hunt for faint planetary nebulae, as the first esoteric amateurs did in the past. So this is the enhanced view with O3 filter. You can see the nebula stays, and all the stars go fainter. Again, a quasi-stellar planetary nebula that nothing departs from a random field star for now, but then with a filter. This possible planetary nebula, very slightly fuzzy above the bright star at center, was found by Dana Patrick in 2005 on digitized sky surveys. So this one won't need a filter to be better seen. It has a wider spectrum than usual. Nothing to be seen of Abel 41 without filter, but faintly discernible with O3 filter. Another possible planetary nebula, found by Howell and Crisp in 2006 on their own CCD images. So there you can see faintly something, but it's much better with filter. Nearly nothing to see on Abel 51 without filter, much better with it. Not so much details on this charpless nebula without filter, but lot of contrast gain with it, but disappearing central star. You can't have one cake and eat it too. Without filter, with filter. Abel 39, just barely seen without filter. Much stronger with O3 filter. Here, nothing at all visible without filter. This object was discovered by Moch, Werner, and Pockel. That's why the letters of the reference in 1992. With the filter, you can glimpse two faint patches, and this is the central star. Tiny one, still visible with the filter. An obvious central star on this elusive nebula without filter, and obviously annular with filter. So back to the realm of galaxies in a quest for spirals outside the Messier catalog. These spirals are presented according to increasing distance order. So you can see the distance in megaparsecs on the right, as well as the galaxy type. One stronger spiral arm on that one, and a small and extremely faint stellar H2 ridge. Look out on this image for the small right-angled extensions at the tip of the bar. You can see one on the left, one is going up, and on the right of the bar it's going down. Very nice details in this one. The Trident Galaxy, don't miss the opportunity of a visit, it's worth it. With a good Dobsonian. A faintish extrusion of a linear arm on the south side. Again on the south side, but a tiny arm and much more internal. This one is more apparent, but the arms are unbalanced. And this is back to usual symmetry. Spiral pairing with its closest neighbor on this one, but the fainter PGC galaxy on the left is farther in the universe, not related to the faint external spiral arms here. Curving arms at both extensions ends, along with two faint background galaxies on the eastern half of the field. There you've got to pay attention to the tightly wrapped arms around the central area. Enhancement in eastern arm is NGC 6908 on this drawing, which is another galaxy interacting with the main one. Another single arm spiral there. And in this gravitationally bound trio, don't miss distortion of the northern component and spirality in the eastern. There you can notice the short curving appendages escaping from the main elongated body. There I wish you pay attention to the short and faint extrusions from the envelope around the core. One step further behind the galaxies, the quasars. So they are presented according to increasing redshift order. Maybe you remember this famous arc link between galaxy and quasar, visible on early CCD images. So this is the quasar, just south of the galaxy. I consider the quasars next to galaxies as the utmost esoterical site for a time, which adds a fuzzy touch to otherwise only stellar-looking views, in my opinion. So this is the quasar, very near. Second galaxy quasar pair, it could have figured in the spiral galaxy section also. This is the quasar. The third sample, so the galaxy is very small, but the quasar is just there, faint enough. The fourth is even visible with modest aperture. You see, it's an 8-inch only, and the quasar is there. Getting over the unit in redshift value, the blazar CTA 102 erupted in late 2016 with brightness variations noticeable on the hour scale. Usually at magnitude 18, it reached 11 or 12 for months. And I had the chance of having holidays just after the burst. So I could draw it. Tiny NGC 7477 is stellar looking in the small group, star group, to the south. You always look for the button, yes. There is NGC. Yeah, it's quite a star. And the quasar is there. Now we are above 3 in redshift. So far, far away. The quasar is just the faint star at the center of the drawing. The same here. So this target is commonly recognized as one of the farthest visible quasar with amateur means. But I wanted to reach the 4 level. The ZD equal 4 level. So I started with some candidates in the Milikwas catalogue and met success immediately, but after further checkout with Pan-STARRS close-ups, all colors, and the green band, the quasar appearing red and much fainter than the star on the green band, one must conclude that it was rather the star that I had seen. So same story with this second try. I thought I succeed, but no. The red quasar is much, much fainter than the star in the visual range. But at last, with my third try, both components here on the green band contribute equally to the combined brightness. So may one consider I saw the quasar? I do. Chaotic universe now with interacting galaxies. Some may remember I wrote an article for the Deep Sky Observer some years ago that I've carefully searched for unpublished targets to present to you. So this galaxy shows an uneven low surface brightness. Merging pair and a real trio with a close neighbor. Here again, a close merging pair. The main galaxy there is triangular and interacts with the two others. This is an interaction without obvious distortion. And that is, I didn't see the distortions. That's not, they are, but not visible to me. The same here, because I saw a hint of spiral in the main component, but not really really disturbed. There, interaction is giving the main object a broken eastern extension, and the faint companion escapes towards the east. Interactive couples are to be found even with a modest aperture. Here it's in a 8-inch scope. They are, what can I say, esoterical champion, I think. It's a great view. Hypertrophic spiral arms in both components. Here are features of gravitational stress. There you will have a hard time. Discrete sign of interactions shows a flatter eastern side, like an end-drawn companion superimposed. So this digital drawing is subtle. You ought to use averted vision to catch this detail.
On the right side of the galaxy there, it's a little straighter, a little line here.
This Seyfert galaxy shows a bright nucleus, of course, and a faint companion overlaps the eastern edge. There are its two merging flat galaxies. And a fan-shaped disturbed object. A real trio with a companion to the south, but the northern galaxy is a chance alignment. This one. She's out of the group. Interactive trio with a small companion embedded in the disk. There. Again, a pair of galaxies looking fan-shaped. Now, let's meet some odd couples. The universe in perspective, offering in the same field of view some seldom interacting duos. So here it's an open cluster and dark love. There are open cluster and open clusters, two open clusters. Planetary nebula and galaxy. Globular cluster and galaxy, there. This one is faint. Galaxy, there, through an open cluster. The open cluster is spread in the field. So there is the first galaxy, and this tiny stellar-looking object is a Seyfert galaxy also. So two galaxies through an open cluster. Here a galaxy and quasar, so to be added to all those we have already seen. The quasar is on the left and is a little fuzzy. A couple of globular clusters in the same field. A couple of planetary nebulae, so stellar planetary nebulae. This is with filter, without filter. You have 30 seconds to find out the nebulae. No, I give a hint there and there. Sorry. This one appears quite only with filter. The others is still visible in both cases. Globular cluster and planetary nebula. So this one is hard. So when you know where it is, it's better. This one is just there. Okay, so you can see that it's anonymous there and much better evident here. Planetary nebula and quasar. So the quasar is here. The planetary nebula, you have a hint of it. But with filter, no quasar. One can have them all together, but you've got a much better nebula. Galaxy seen through a planetary nebula that is invisible without filter. So the galaxy is here. Okay. And when you put on the filter, you see the planetary nebula, but no galaxy. So here is a visual stacking combining unfiltered and filtered view. But this is impossible to obtain in reality in my telescope at the same time. Some small scope owners in this assembly could suffer from depression at this point of my talk. So I will try to give them some hope. There are esoteric targets for modest apertures, but one must choose smartly. So here is the OB association around the MIRFAC, a great binocular sight, and esoteric object also, because not in the NGC and so on. Faint and large nebula can surprise you in short refractors with the right filters. So this is a drawing by Bertrand Laville. You can look for a starburst H2 region, Markarian 71, in some NGC galaxy. So this is the star to on the downside of the galaxy, just embedded in the nebula. You can look for bright stellar planetary nebula from the Perec and Kohoutek catalog. So they are with filter, without filter. So you can see that the nebula is standing out. Easy Perec and Kohoutek item can also be detected with filters. Nothing without, something with. Another esoteric category with a rare specimen, the supernova remnants. So here is one of the brightest, Veil or Cirrus nebula. It was drawn on several nights. Quite maybe 8 hours of observing to gather the whole thing. This is the Medusa nebula, which is quite invisible without filter, or nearly so, but showing some details with the O3 filter. A bright Wolf Rayet star is at the center there, and it's showing its gaseous shell with filter. Without width. This one is featureless without filter. It's another Wolf Rayet nebula. But excited, this nebula is excited by a member of the little cluster on the right. The cluster is Markarian 50. So the exciting star is this one. Now, a part of a larger supernova remnant complex worth exploring further than I did. This is it with the filter. So, going that way in the field, you've got some other parts, but I didn't take a visit, so I'll be back on this one. In the year 1671, the supernova responsible for Cassiopeia A radio source remained unnoticed. But we benefit from the shell entertained by its shockwave. So this is without filter and with filter. Again, Wolf Rayet nebula, which can be compared to a supernova, but it's not exactly the same. Its central star, WR134, shows a brighter thick zone on the blue side of the spectrum through blaze spectroscope. So, compared to O3. has emission light. This is the World Project star. So we filter. We filter. Now to exotic nebulae, young stellar objects for the most part. So here is a Mira type star with accretion disk caused by a white dwarf companion surrounded by expanding gaseous shell. So it's the tiny blob extruding towards northeast, just over the orange star. The mighty Frosty Leo, post AGB star, or protoplanetary nebula if you prefer. This nebula is enlightened by a Tetori type star. This one is illuminated by a spectroscopic binary of A and G spectra. In these objects, you can nearly always see the star, so this is the one. And there are around FU Orionis, there are also a nebula which is embedded in a larger dark cloud, Barnard 35. So that's why there are not so much stars.
Yeah.
Yes.
2 minutes.
Sorry. Yeah, 30 objects. So I will just stop speaking and let it go through. It's a nebulous arc. They are lit by an air big AEBE star. There again, a Tetori type star. Central star of air big AEBE type again, but this nebula shows some structure. Here only a faint glow, and lighted by a Tetori star again. This one, the famous red rectangle, so it's extremely faint, and it's just above the central star, which is in a post-AGB stage. Here are a pair of young stellar objects, there and there. Now this variable nebula, it was discovered by McNeil in January 2004, and at that time I had some holidays the month after and I was able to observe it. And this is the field 10 years later. So you see there, you see the nebula, and there, no nebula. So if Lord Ross' assistants had observed at the time and found the change, they could have doubted. This is the nebula around Tetori, giving the name to all the other specimens. And it eluded me twice before visual success. Not much studied, this field is of historical interest for those in the NGC mistakes. So the NGC cluster is there, and it has no... Yeah, there is the NGC object, and sometimes it was assumed to be the nebula the NGC observers see, but no, this is what they saw, and the nebula is remained anonymous. Very small fan-shaped nebula. Another one of the family. So this one is on the side of the cluster Dolides 8. You can see the cluster there. And the nebula there. Another young stellar object. Sharpless catalog. So this is the elusive X nebula. It's invisible without filter. A lot easier with H beta filter. And its exciting star is not identified at the moment, so its distance remains to be defined. This is a pair of young stellar objects discovered by Thomes One of them was discovered by Jim Thomas in November 2009. This is the extended Vandenberg 1, which is lit by a hot B star, and the small GN nebula there stands against their big AEB type star. Now we can explore planetary nebula halos. A very faint nebula extrusion appear on the dumbbell, like ears on the sides of the faint loops. There are an extremely faint halo around the ring nebula, which is doubling its diameter. Easy halo around the cat's eye, and IC-4677 is the cometary patch on the right. This is the IC. And there an extremely faint halo around the blinking nebula in Cygnus. Finally, the holy grail of esoteric could consist of gravitational lenses. Here, Bertrand Laville observed the head-on collision between a small companion and a normal spiral that created a shockwave and starburst ring. Bertrand also drew the same forming process here, although no companion remains are to be found. The famous Einstein's cross, gravitational lensing through two big telescopes in his small 25 inch and in the bigger 31. they are the double image of a quasar, which was only elongated visually. And there it's a quadruple quasar image, but it gave Bertrand only an elongation impression because all the quasar images are not of the same brightness. So unavoidable here in Cambridge, the last object I will propose is a tribute to the late Stephen Hawking, who will be remembered. So this is the radio galaxy Cygnus A, hosting a supermassive black hole, and it was a logical choice for this dedication. It's faintly the galaxy there. So I hope my talk gave you the motivation to search for esoteric objects. Maybe you wonder how I selected these and how to find esoteric ideas for yourself. So first, read the Web Society's publications. They often give you good ideas. And you can also go to the Deep Sky Forum, which is there are plenty of big scope owners sharing their own esoteric objects. So do go esoteric, please. You will not forget regret it. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Jan.
Well, time is pressing on a bit. I think we'll have one question, and the rest of you will have to try and nail Jan at lunchtime for the answers.
Ask the question at the table.
Yeah, ask the question. One question. Yeah. Yes, sir.
You observe from what, 5,400 feet? The altitude?
In meters, it's
16.
Yeah,
okay, so that's about 1,600 meters.
And
have you tried the same telescope at sea level?
No, I have tried it higher.
Yeah.
At 3,000 meters.
I think he means under our crappy sky.
I'm just trying to get an idea of what the advantage of the altitude is.
So
is 3,000 meters that much better than 1,600?
Not so much.
No.
But
you've not tried it the other way.
I have not tried it, but I feel there may be. It should be the same.
So what's the limiting stellar magnitude through the telescope? I mean, you said it's 6.8 megadi. What's the limiting magnitude through the telescope?
About 17, just under 17.
Okay.
I have done a Farol test many years ago. I hope to do it again. But it wasn't around that.
I think you've got a good half magnitude on anything we get anyway, because because of the aperture.
Yes. From my experience, the different altitudes.
My 16-inch got down to 16.1. So yours is a 17.5, so you'd expect it to be a bit better. So you still, I reckon you've got half a magnitude on it.
Okay, no. As I said, it's a low-quality telescope. For the optics, I mean. So if you have sharper optics than mine...
You might get a better result.
Especially on stellar magnitude limits.
Yeah.
Maybe not so on nebulous fuzzy objects, but on stellar limits, the optical quality speaks for itself.
You're very lucky you get the altitude. That's what I want. Well, I
don't get it often.
We don't get any clear sky, we never get any altitude.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks very much again, Jan. Right, it's lunchtime. We meet again at 2 o'clock. If anybody wants to look at the Northumberland telescope, Dr. Derek Jones is just standing up behind you. He's going to ring a bell at some point in the future. If you gather with him, he'll show you the telescope before we start. Thank you. Oh, hello, Sarah. Oh, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Right.
Okay. Shall I give you?
If you give me, if you've got a USB stick or something thereabouts. Oh, lovely. Right. Stick that on there. Here, because we know.
Hi.
Nice to meet you finally.
Thank you.
After all those little tweets.
I know.
I'm not really into it that much, but.
Well, we try. The trouble is, there's an awful lot of images coming in. We try and balance visual and imaging. We still have quite a few people who just do the imaging.
Right, the visual guys can sleep their lunch off just as long as they don't snort.
It's best to have a morning session if you want to get the point over. Yes. No, that's actually.
I don't know what stage I'm gonna give out my secret. I've never looked through a telescope. I probably won't.
Don't tell him that. We won't tell him. Thank you. You're Mark then, presumably.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Thanks for coming.
So
right.
Laser so, is the green, is the laser the, yeah, perfect.
Yeah, that shifts a man, that's the laser as well. It's already switched it off. It should be on, I might, that should be alright, but the top one is the top one's a laser.
That's good. I'm starting to have the lights on, because everything's quite bright.
Sort of more attractive.
You'll sort of see me doing this anyway.
Right. Okay, well, do you want this sort of light level?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. Yeah,
you
I'm
sure?
Quite happy. Yeah, I'm
okay.
quite happy.
I think my light's a bit lower.
Maybe a bit lower, but just so that...
Because I like interaction with you, I'll ask some questions.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if I can stop it halfway.
I'm going to ask questions in mine. I'm going to ask a couple of questions.
You prefer it darker than lighter, though?
Dim.
Dim.
Again, it's not really. I haven't got any fire.
I'd rather, if this can go just slightly dimmer, that would be great, but if not, then I'm quite happy to do it.
Interaction's good. I'm going to ask some questions. Test the audience.
I
can ask a couple of questions. Get them to. It's good. Interaction would be good. Come out the front door. That's all right.
Excellent. Right.
Good, lovely.
Nice.